Hi, Melissa.
Hi, Cherish.
How's it going?
Oh, I'm exhausted. How are you?
I'm doing good. We are here for another installation of the Babysitter's Club. Hey guys, this is Cherish and Melissa. Say hi, Melissa.
Hi, Melissa.
Don't be a dick.
I can't help it. I am what I am.
We are here today to talk about issue number 5 in the Babysitter's Club book series.
We actually didn't write these.
We didn't write these. By Anne M. Martin. This week's episode is about Dawn and the Impossible Three. It is the 5th book in the Babysitter's Club series. This is where we meet Dawn Schaefer for the first time. Okay.
Dawn.
And I'm going to just read this plot summary thing. Dawn sits for wild charges of a recent divorce. I don't know who wrote that. Also, Christy thinks things were better without Dawn.
Don't we all, Christy?
I certainly thought so. Dawn starts sitting for 3 Barrett children, but their mom, Mrs. Barrett, is a complete scatterbrain. I don't like the sound of that. She starts off by leaving Dawn with the wrong phone number, which Dawn doesn't find out until Susie needs her mom. The Barretts really like Dawn, and Dawn ends up missing club meetings. But what will she do when Buddy Barrett goes missing? Dawn is afraid Buddy has been kidnapped. Things go wrong when Barretts come home. What?
Huh?
This is like...
This is out of control.
It truly is.
Children when their parents divorce.
Also, Dawn is not... Or Christy's not a huge fan of Dawn. And Dawn really just wants to work hard and show Christy what she's made of. I don't know what Christy's problem is, but I think it's jealousy with Marianne. We're going to talk about that in just a second. So this is going to be a two-themed episode.
Ooh, competing themes.
Yeah.
Whatever shall we do?
We're going to cover them both.
Sounds like we're getting as wild as the Barrett children.
Yes. Why not? So first theme, I guess, is going to be children of divorce. These wild-ass kids. Can't be tamed because their mom is a scatterbrain. I don't know.
There's a lot to unpack there, I think.
Yeah, I don't know how to feel about that.
Well, neither.
Okay. And then the second theme is probably going to be dealing with female friendships / jealousies.
Uh-huh.
All right.
Yeah, I like this. I like this a lot.
All right.
This makes my horrible morning easier to bear.
Why don't you just tell the viewers, listeners, very quickly about your horrible morning.
I would love to, Cherish. Thank you for this opportunity. You know me, I just want to bitch for a while.
Sure. Just for like 4 minutes, though.
Also, I'm super tired today and cranky, so if I'm more negative than usual, it's because I'm so tired. So, dear reader, yesterday... I had a very traumatic experience when my car was rear-ended on the street. I was in my car, and my car is very cute, so it was very traumatic for me. I'm fine. I'm not hurt. And actually, the car is barely damaged. It hasn't been checked out yet. But I'm very pissed about it. And then when I got home, after catching my 4th Moltres and other Pokemon Go players will know what that means, when I got home, my sink in my bathroom started pouring water out of the pipe underneath. So I've been up almost all night bailing water from the bucket under my sink into the toilet so my bathroom doesn't flood because my apartment complex is not answering the emergency maintenance phone, and they are still not here this morning. So I'm tired, and I'm sorry about that, dear reader.
Yeah, I don't know what the point of an emergency phone call is, phone number is, if nobody answers.
I don't either, because when my apartment was literally on fire in January, no one answered that emergency maintenance phone or called me back for 3 days. The fire department ripped the outlet out of my wall so that my apartment wouldn't, like, burn to the ground.
Ugh.
And I had live exposed electrical wires in my bathroom hanging out of the wall for 3 days.
Shock wire.
Yeah, shock wire.
A flavor of a Mountain Dew beverage. Shock wire. Also, we need to address corrections corner. There's some corrections / update. There was something that we left out of the last episode. We forgot to speculate wildly about Anne and Martin.
I'm so disappointed in us.
I know. It was on the list. We got caught up with other stuff. Mm-hmm. I think we got caught up talking about the majesty of Feelgood.
Oh.
It could happen to anybody. So, what do you think what do you think's up with Anne?
Should we save it for later?
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, that's fine.
Isn't that how we end? We always end on, well, not always. We can't say that anymore.
Yeah, we can end with that.
Yeah.
While we're talking, think at the same time. I think I've got some ideas. also, update corner. Last episode, we talked about R. Kelly being a total perv and rapist. Well, update. It seems that ticket sales have dramatically dropped off, and he's going to have to cancel, like, a handful of cities on his new tour. Huzzah!
Yeah, good. I would like to think that we had some small role in that.
I'd like to think so, too. Hit him in the checkbook. Okay, so, Melissa, start us off with the first theme of this stupid book, Dawn and the Impossible Three.
The Children of Divorce.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if I'm going to start us off talking about Children of Divorce, I should probably say that, like, when these books were written, divorce was a huge pressing social concern.
Yeah.
And, like, everyone was flipping out about divorce in the United States because it seemed like all of a sudden everybody's getting divorced. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I know that Ronald Reagan in California introduced no-fault divorce, I believe, in the 70s.
Really?
So, yeah. It's, like, literally the one thing we have to thank him for on the left is when he was governor of California. He's the one who introduced no-fault divorce, and when that happened, women could leave their husbands, even if their husbands didn't show up in court. If their husbands were beating them, they could finally leave them.
Mm.
Because before, you know, irreconcilable differences were not a thing. Amicable divorce was not a thing. So once that was allowed, you know, then all of a sudden, everyone was like, why is everyone getting divorced all the time?
Mm.
And what's happening in the institution of marriage? And it wasn't necessarily that, you know, like, the institution of marriage was crumbling. It was that people who legitimately needed divorces could finally get them.
Right.
And so this book is being written at a time when a lot of parents are divorcing, and there's this demographic of young people who have parents who are getting divorced. So my concern with Anne, and my beef with Anne,
oh, shit,
right from the get-go.
Oh, no.
Right from the get-go, Anne, is how weirdly anti-feminist of you to position a woman, a single mom,
yeah,
in her book in the 80s as number one, an ineffective mother all by herself, and number two, like, her children are out of control.
She's scatterbrained.
Yeah. And, I mean, the mere fact that, like, every summary I've read of this book again positions these children as children of divorce.
Mm.
Tells me that, if nothing else, in the reader's minds, these two things were very connected, even if Anne's not trying to make that connection specifically. And I just want to say right out of the gate, you know what? Some people need to get fucking divorced. Oh,
Oh, no.
Oh, no. You shouldn't let children listen to this podcast. I think anyone should have figured that out at this point.
It's labeled explicit. It's fine.
It's labeled explicit. It's not on iTunes because it's explicit.
No, that's not true. It's not on iTunes because they hate us. Tell your friends.
Tell your friends. We're being discriminated against. Well, as the great American poet Taylor Swift said, haters gonna hate.
I think I saw that in a Norton anthology.
Oh no, I think you're what you're thinking of is Bad Blood.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, Bad Blood's anthologized all the time. Sleep It Off's still pretty, you know, people don't like to pick it up a lot.
Right behind Leaves of Grass. Okay, so that is an important point to make. Thank you for giving us a history lesson on the one thing that Ronald Reagan did that was worth a damn. It was probably so he could get a divorce.
Yeah, like Henry VIII. That's fine. Yeah. If you want it, that's fine. We all benefit.
It's true. And yeah, I do have a little issue. Bear in mind, readers, we did not read this book again, so we're
it's
just
kind of our thing.
Yeah, it's kind of our thing, you know it. But yeah, the fact that there are single moms written about in this particular book, who are labeled scatterbrain and their kids are wild and crazy, one maybe goes missing. I don't know what that's about.
Right. It also kind of seems like it's Dawn's fault. She's babysitting.
I mean, come on. It's like 2 hours of babysitting. What could go wrong? you know, that I think that plays into the other thing that Ronald Reagan was known for. You know, single moms and, you know, welfare queen stuff.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, if this is a black mom, obviously she's not, but...
She lives in Connecticut.
Right.
Jessie's not in the book yet.
She's not. But, you know, you got these, you know, unfair stereotypes about single moms not getting shit done because their man left them or whatever for a secretary. And we don't know the circumstances of how this lady, Mrs. Barrett, we don't know. Mm-hmm. Frankly, it doesn't matter.
No.
But Melissa's right. Sometimes divorce is very necessary, especially if you are in an unsafe, dangerous situation with toxic people, man or woman.
And also, I mean, unpopular opinion, even if divorce is not necessary, if you just don't want to be married anymore,
right?
Cool. Like, I think that's something we put a lot of emphasis on, especially in the U.S. And in some ways, I feel like it's very tied to homophobia.
Mm.
But like this idea that like, oh, because you're just not happy is not a legitimate reason to leave someone, and it's like, no, like. Literally, that is the only point of your life. Like,
mm-hmm.
to do your best, be happy, don't be a dick. So, like, if you just don't want to be married anymore, get yourself a divorce.
Yeah.
It doesn't make you bad.
No. No, it doesn't. And, yeah, I think a lot of this has to do with, you know, religious kind of BS. Mm-hmm. And some of it is steeped in homophobia. Gay marriage is still something, I mean, it's on the books or whatever, but it's still something that you have to fight for because it's threatening to ruin the institution of marriage.
Right. Like, ugh.
And another case, ages ago, the Loving story.
Mm-hmm.
Interracial couples could not get married until, what, 1950... don't quote me on this, but As late as the 1960s, I think.
Yes.
That was still an issue.
Yeah.
And guess what? They fought for us to get married. They got divorced.
Because it turns out people change.
That's right. People change. Now, what would that look like if you fought all that time to get married to your white husband? And then you found out, you know what? Maybe we're not that happy.
Yeah.
Maybe I should just stick it out since we're the poster children of interracial marriage.
Oh, I hope not.
Well, they didn't.
They didn't. Good. And, you know, especially like the gay rights movement, it's just littered with people like plaintiffs in major landmark, you know, Supreme Court cases that had to be rhetorically positioned in such a way or like kind of branded in such a way that is not indicative of the reality of their relationships. But like lawyers and lobbyists and all that like saw an opportunity in some of these cases to challenge specific aspects of the law. And then we hold them up like, oh, these people just loved each other so much that they went to court. And it's like, well, it's cynical, but like the American legal system doesn't really work that way. And like, we don't make giant landmark legislation just based on a beautiful story. So like, yeah, they wanted to get married at one time, but like, they're still just people.
Right.
You know, we should let them off the hook.
Yeah.
You know? Like, but we don't let ourselves off the hook for this shit either.
No.
You know, part of the reason I'm not married is because I don't want to get divorced, because getting divorced sounds awful.
Yeah, it does. I would say the biggest challenge, it sounds like, is dividing assets, figuring out where the money goes, figuring out how to rebuild your life.
Oh my God.
And God knows if you spend enough time with this person, like, then you gotta figure out how to get back into the dating scene.
Which is the most depressing thing in the world.
Fuck that.
Yup.
So I will say for certain, I'm not divorcing Noah for anything.
No.
He's stuck here.
Until he has to be eaten on the mountain to ensure your survival.
Yeah.
And then I have to send Mary Beth a fruit basket. I think that's the arrangement we have, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Fruit and meat basket.
And cured me. Your son was eaten. I'm sorry.
Maybe a singing telegram as well?
Yeah. Chairs didn't do it.
But yeah, it's very difficult to get a divorce when money is tied into the equation. Even harder when children are in the equation. But that shouldn't stop people from, you know, saying, this was a lie. I've got to move on.
Right? Like, I know so many people who are trapped in these, I shouldn't say trapped, but seem to be in marriages that are not fulfilling to them, where it literally feels like they're just waiting around until someone dies so they might get to, like, win a house.
Yeah.
And, like, I mean, they don't do anything together anymore. They don't interact with each other anymore, but they're like, well, I got kids. And I'm like, what are you really trying to tell your kids? Like, well, you made your bed, so now you literally have to lie in it for the rest of your life. It doesn't matter what you feel. It doesn't matter if you're happy. Like, is that what you want to teach your children?
Right, and kids are not stupid, even though they sometimes are.
Mm-hmm.
They know what an unhappy house looks and sounds like.
Yeah, and the real sad thing about really little kids is they don't have the cognitive capacity to understand that that's not their fault.
Right.
So, like, if there's a really unhappy, shitty home, the way little kids internalize that is they did it.
Right.
Or there's something wrong with them. And they carry that with them for the rest of their lives.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Speaking of which, we're both children of divorce.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Many divorces in my mom's case.
In mine as well.
Yeah.
Without going into particulars, how do you feel about your mom's many attempts to find love?
they make me feel sad for her.
Yeah.
Because I don't know, but this is my own personal mindset of, like, I wish she didn't, on some level, want to be married so much.
Mm.
Because when she is married, she's very unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's a thing she feels like she's supposed to do. I mean, in her current marriage right now, she seems happier than she's ever seemed.
Okay.
But she also married someone who's very much like her.
Right.
And, you know, and how do I put this? A lot of people are like, oh, marry someone who compliments you. And I'm like, you know what? There is something to be said for, like, doubling your fun.
Sure.
Instead of picking someone who doesn't have a lot of things in common with you. I mean, with my mom and her current husband, Tom, who Tom is basically the dad I always wanted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I get to talk about my feelings with him. We watch Game of Thrones together. They just have a great time. And yeah. They fight like crazy. But, like, they love each other.
Right.
And to me, that's a good marriage. I wish my mom would have had the self-confidence to not settle for anything less than this earlier.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes me sad about her divorces. I don't look at them as failed marriages. I look at them as she didn't have the confidence to hold out for what she deserved.
Mm. That makes sense. I think that's probably the same case with my mom, who was divorced, you know, several times. And remarried or whatever several times. It's the remarrying part that just gets me so confused. Like, you know, just wait a minute. Like, wait a good goddamn second and figure out who you are. But, you know, it's the generation of women before us who I think were just kind of abused over and over again with that idea. Get married, find a man, somebody to take care of you. Like, if that is just bashed into you so many times, like, who are you without a relationship? Well, then, yeah.
It's just them?
What's up?
Do you think it's just their generation? Because, like, I think our generation is bashed over the head with that, too.
I think us less so.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, the Murphy Browns of the world mm-hmm. kind of... I mean, it's all a lie, but that kind of changed things up for us just a tad. And I think with the fight for, you know, gay marriage, I think that has opened up a few more doors and people just, you know, being a little cooler and more lax about, you know, ending up with somebody for the rest of your life or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, what are our moms born in, like, mid-50s?
My mom was born 49.
Okay. That's right. My mom was born in 53. So you got baby boom kids. You've still got a lot of... I mean, this is before Betty Friedan, you know?
Betty Friedan?
Friedan? Friedman?
Friedan.
This is before Feminine Mystique.
The feminine mistake.
This is before somebody told women. I'm sorry, reader.
Listeners. You told me not to be a dick today, and I can't help it.
It was a dick move, but people need to know that it's not Betty Friedan.
You know me, sun's out, guns out. You know, real sorry, guys. I got inspired by the mooch this week, and I'm just insufferable. And back to divorce.
But yes, women did not have the writings of Betty Friedan to tell them. Friedan. Fuck you. To tell them. I'm cutting all of this out.
I love this.
You know, they didn't have somebody to tell them that as a housewife with kids in this loveless marriage, you feel unhappy, and your mom probably felt unhappy before you, and you guys didn't talk about it because that's just the way it is. But anyway, as children of divorce, we look at our moms and we've learned something, right? I mean, it was hard when we were kids, but we grew older and we learned, like, oh, maybe this is what I don't want to do, right? I hope.
I don't know.
What did you learn?
Well, I've read statistics that, like, the average age for someone's first marriage are going up. But, I mean, the divorce rates in this country are going down, you know, and part of the panic that was going on in the 80s is the divorce rates were spiking because people could get these divorces for the first time. But after the people who really needed to get them kind of started getting them, the divorce rate went down.
So it's not 50% anymore?
I thought it was like 40% at this point. Now, one thing that has changed, I read this the other day, and it wasn't in a study about divorce. It was in something else about single women, and I can't remember where it is now. And someone please email us and tell me if I'm wrong. I'm sure you will. But I read the other day that in the 1970s, 10% of the population of single women over 45 had never been married.
Okay.
So, like, it was only 10% of women, well, people who were single over the age of 45 had never married. And now, like, 30 years later, that number is 14%.
Oh.
So, technically, that's a 40% increase.
Okay.
But the numbers are so small that it's still only 14% of people over the age of 45 have never been married. So, like, it's statistically, it's a huge percentage increase, but it's still a small number of people. So honestly, I'm not necessarily totally persuaded that we're buying this myth that we have to be partnered off any less. And I think that, you know, gay marriage is a wonderful thing. I'm a member of the queer community. I'm super happy for more representation, especially for more legal rights. But I've never been a strong supporter of gay marriage. Personally, only because I'm like, oh, okay, you know, like one of my favorite queer theorists, Lisa Dugan, says in this essay called The New Homonormativity, oh, good, now we can go back to the kitchen forever until we die, just like straight people. she talks about, and I'm persuaded by this, that she talks about gay marriage and marriage itself as a way of sort of commodifying the type of life someone can have. If you're married, you're probably going to have children, you're probably going to buy property, you're probably going to make long-term investments in specific communities, you're going to feel really bad if you don't want to be in that anymore. So, like, if you're married, it's really just part of, like, capitalism.
Yeah.
And when gay people get married, it, like, kind of defangs the political power of queerness.
Oh.
Right?
Okay.
I'm totally persuaded by this, and I'm also very pro-divorce. I'm like, yeah, leave your spouse.
Yes. No, I like that. I like that. I don't think I ever thought about that, actually. The weddings, I have a huge problem with hetero or or gay. I think the wedding bonanza is just insane. It is. And I didn't think about life after the wedding, where you choose to settle, what kind of investments you make, what kids you have, what you do for your community, which, you know, if you're wealthy, is pretty closed off. You don't have to worry about, you know, any other neighborhood outside of yourself. And yeah, your life just suddenly becomes very domestic.
Yeah.
And very, and
especially for queer people, all of a sudden your life looks pretty straight and white.
Yeah. Yeah, it's maybe marriage isn't the ticket.
I don't think it is.
I've already been married for 8 years. Should I cut it off?
Yeah, everything's fine. Moving's hard.
Moving is hard.
Yeah. Honestly, I really honestly, in my cynical, cold, dead heart, really believe that most people don't get divorced because moving is hard.
It's so hard.
All your stuff's there.
Traumatic.
Yeah.
You gotta go from one place to the next carrying heavy things.
Mm-hmm. I mean, my long-term partner and I, who we've since broken up years ago, but I legitimately think the only reason that she finally was like, yeah, I'm done with this, is because we'd already moved me out so I could go to my PhD program.
Damn.
And it was like, oh, now the hard work of moving is done. Let's cut this off. Let's end the pretense that I'm going to, like, come visit you every other weekend.
It's a cowardly move, but yeah, I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. Cowardly move, but...
So, let's try to address the, I guess, being a child of a divorced kid. Especially in this case, single moms. I've told you a number of times, and I wasn't a child of a single mom for too much longer, because when I was 7, my mom got married again.
Yeah.
So, but in that time, yeah, we struggled quite a bit. We were poor as fuck. And, you know, I was a latchkey kid coming in and out of the house. Bus driver was keeping a watch out for me. But life back then, I think, was simple. And when it was just me and my mom, I was like, well, you know, I know where my allegiances lie.
Right. Don't think about that too hard.
No. And I think when you're that age, you know, a 5-year-old or 6-year-old and you're poor, I don't think you really notice quite as much.
No.
But when I got older, now that I think of it, that time must have been incredibly stressful for my mom. A little kid, just, you know, that's like your one big responsibility. Your other big responsibility is keeping down a full-time job. So,
well, if you're lucky.
Yeah, if you're lucky. And she worked in retail full-time. There was no childcare situation when I came home. That was, you know, if anybody found out I was staying at home by myself, I could have ended up in foster care.
Yeah.
So I'm really offended when Ann M. Martin says, this scatterbrained mom and her wild-ass kids don't know what's going on.
Right.
You know, it's very easy to accidentally give somebody the wrong phone number. What if she gave her a fax number instead? It happens.
Or what if she just wanted 10 minutes to her goddamn self?
Right.
You know, like... My mom, honestly, okay, here's why I get pissed at Anne. Because I feel like, especially when you have a reading audience, which, in all honesty, who read these books demographically? I don't have any proof for this, but there's probably a lot of little white girls who are reading these books.
Right.
And telling their moms about them. So, like, if you've got someone like my mom is a white lady who, when she divorced my dad, left a very abusive situation
right. On
many fronts. And it was in the mid-80s. She was terrified to do it. She had no confidence.
Right.
She had no skills. You know, she had no higher education training. So all of a sudden, she's working 1 full-time job, 2 part-time jobs, busting her ass. The whole time, my dad is not paying child support.
Right.
It was a horrible situation, and she would not go on welfare because we were poor working class white people.
Right.
Who she wouldn't call it this, but there's racist ideology.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, well, I'm not going on welfare. That's for black people.
Yeah.
That's for people who are mooching off the state. And here comes Ronald Reagan's welfare queen.
Right.
But when Anne is telling stories like this to her reading public, they don't stop at those little girls. You know, they filter out to their moms, too. And there is this social shame
right. About
going on public assistance when, realistically, a lot of single moms, I know, I had no idea we were poor, but I did know I was alone all the time.
Yeah.
Which we've talked about. I called the police because of dinosaurs.
That's right.
Like, I was alone all the time. And I wish I could have had a mom. And I wish she would have known that it didn't mean anything bad about her to utilize public programs that she's paying into with her taxes.
Right.
Specifically for situations like that.
Yes. Yeah, we didn't have public assistance until my little sister was born, and then we went on WIC. But that's mm-hmm. for all women who have young children, infants.
Yep.
So, but I wish that I wish that my mom had taken advantage of that as well. But as a Black woman, I'm sure she mm-hmm. thought, "Oh, hell no."
Yeah, can't do that.
No.
There's so much stigma.
Right.
And we paid for it. Like, these are our benefits.
We paid for it in some way or another. And yeah, I think what you said about the time that was lost because our moms were just working so hard. That's what's really important. I didn't have, like, Christmas toys or, like, fancy kicks, as the kids called them.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was awesome when my mom got a day off and we could, like, go somewhere. Or, mm-hmm. like, there were random times where she had a day off and she could volunteer for field trips at school. And I was like, hey, my mom's coming on the bus. Aww. Like, I grew out of that really fast, though. It's like, Mom, you can just drop me off here.
Right. Please drop me off two streets away and stop looking at me.
Yes. But yeah, it's time that, you know, it's time that children of single moms miss out on. And who knows what is even written about as far as, like, this father goes. I'm sure it's a normal white people divorce where the dad, like, picks up the kids on the weekends or whatever.
This is your new stepmom, who is my secretary, which is another divorce myth I want to talk about. Ugh, these myths we tell each other, like, these stories we tell each other.
Yeah.
Like, I've been thinking about this for a while. Like, what is this myth of, like, you know how everyone always says, like, don't date a married man because he's never going to leave his wife?
Yeah.
Well, then the flip side of that is everyone tells women, oh, be careful, he's going to leave you for a younger woman?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, it's like, it's both and neither. Is the real point of both of these stories what we should be saying is, don't trust men if you're a woman? Like, don't trust the man you're married to?
Yeah, I think in both of those instances, only women end up getting hurt. So.
And it's like, well, it can't be that he's never going to leave his wife, but he's also going to leave you for a younger woman someday.
Right.
Like, both of those can't be true.
No. I think at the end of the day, it's just that men ain't shit. So,
you should find yourself a Christy.
Speaking of Christy.
Pivot.
Yeah, thank you. I want to know what the fuck her deal is with ragging on new member Dawn like this.
I think I know what her deal is.
Yeah, I think so too. So she's like besties now with Marianne. And yeah. Marianne is exclusively Christy's best friend.
Correction, Christy's property.
Oh my gosh. And so this new bitch, Dawn, just sashays into town from California. Bear in mind, I think all of these girls are children of divorce themselves.
Except for Claudia.
Right. Yeah, except for Claudia.
Claudia has too many relatives living in her home.
In these first set of books, Claudia is the only one who doesn't come from a broken home.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah. I still don't remember. Is Dawn's parents are divorced? Marianne's parents are divorced? Or her mom is dead? Why do I keep thinking that her mom is dead?
Maybe she is. Do you want me to look it up real quick? I'll do some research.
Okay.
Okay. I'm just going to say, is Marianne's mom dead? Google. Google, tell me.
So yeah, Dawn comes in with her new fancy save the world California notions. And Christy, who I don't even know how she became a member anyway, because without Christie's permission.
Her mom is dead.
Okay. That's what I thought.
Wait, is that right?
Her dad is a widower and ended up marrying Don's mom. Yeah.
She died when Miriam was a baby.
Gotcha.
She got so bored.
Oh, shit.
Shots fired!
Okay.
Then he marries, her dad marries Don's mom, Sharon.
Okay. Gotcha.
And she has a grandma who's a farmer. Sounds right.
Don has a grandma farmer?
Marianne.
Oh. Well, that sounds interesting.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, yeah, what's the deal with Christy? Can you elaborate on this for us?
Well, as someone who grew up a young bi woman,
mm-hmm.
I could say that Christy, there's a possibility that Christy does have a little crush on Marianne, and she's so young that she doesn't know that, like, being territorial like that is gross and possessive.
Right.
Honestly, what's more likely, as much as I love my Christy loves Marianne, and that's the only reason Marianne is in these books narrative, the reality is that, you know, like, this is a very common thing with friendships in young women.
Yeah.
And women of all ages.
Yeah.
You know, like, when you're really close with your other lady friends, and in some cases, here comes this bitch.
From California.
Like, yeah. Like, I don't like her. I don't like that bitch. I don't like how she looks at me. I don't like how she dresses. I don't like how she talks. No, ma'am.
No, ma'am, Pam. Female friendships are very complex and in many cases just too wild. Female friendships are probably the most complicated relationship in humanity.
You think?
I think so. There's, like, a lot of ins and outs and ups and downs and such.
I would say that friendships between women are often the most transparent.
Are they?
Well, and what I mean by that, they're the most honest in some ways.
Are they?
Yeah, like, because I don't...
What age are we talking?
Any.
Huh. Okay.
Well, I think because women are socialized to talk about their feelings, especially with each other, I don't think it's that other relationships don't have these facets to them. It's okay. That we make them plain.
Okay.
Because it's okay for us to do so socially.
Hmm.
What's not okay is women expressing their anger, and so you get, like, petty passive-aggressive shit in women's friendships that you don't necessarily get in male friendships. But, like, in bromances, if you will.
Right.
You know, because men are told from an early age that they're allowed to be pissed at each other, and that's okay. But women aren't told that, so you'll get underhanded, cunty stuff.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah, maybe you're right. I think I'm a fairly complex person, and so... Yeah, okay. My relationships with other women have always been, like, fraught with insecurities and emotional baggage and jealousies and whatever I bring into the relationship as it concerns my mom, I guess.
I was gonna say, that's not because you're a woman, that's because you were fucking abused.
So the most complex relationships in humanity is probably mother and daughter.
Yeah, probably.
And sometimes that spills into female friendships.
Yes. Especially when ladies are young.
Right.
Like, our choices on who we want to be friends with, or who we think we want to be friends with.
How many best friends did you have when you were a kid, when you were, like, 11?
I was 11?
Yeah.
One.
You had one best friend. I've talked to a number of little girls who say that they have 1 to 4 best friends.
What is... I had 2 by the time I was 14.
Okay, so, like, was there a best friend in that relationship that took more precedence over the other best friend? Or were they equal?
Well, at that point in my life, I didn't think of it that way.
Or were you guys just like a trio girl gang?
No, sometimes we were a trio. And then we all, you know, it got strange in high school is when it got strange.
It always does.
You know, that's when my friend Jenny, who was like the sweetest, and she still is, just the sweetest person. I still just love this woman to this day. I wish I saw her more. She was always very sweet and kind and nice. And I had other friends who were not so sweet, kind, and nice, who I also considered my best friends. And so we all didn't hang out together as much.
Mm-hmm.
If I wanted to hang with Jenny, I would go to church with her.
Mm-hmm.
I tried so hard to be an evangelical Christian because I wanted to be around my friends.
Oh, God.
They were like, I love Jesus. And I was like, yeah, I can love Jesus. I could not love Jesus. It's just what you never took. I tried so hard. But yeah, like, and I remember I didn't feel jealousy when it came to my best friends until the end of high school.
Okay.
Then I remember being very jealous when my friend Jolene started hanging out with my friend Danielle. I was like, what the fuck is this?
Behind your back?
No, in front of my face.
Oh,
and
my God.
I got shitty and petty about it and did some underhanded shit. Like, I would talk shit about them to each other because I was so passive-aggressive and awful, and they called me on it, because good for them. They were like, listen, bitch. And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Like, hey, wait a second. Did Melissa tell you?
Yeah. Because I was petty and jealous.
Yeah.
And there wasn't what I like to read into, you know, the whole narrative that I like to read into about Christy, you know, having a crush on Marianne. I didn't have a crush on either of my friends.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted them both to be friends with me first.
Gotcha. Okay.
Probably because I'm a child of divorce.
See, you needed there to be like a hierarchy of friendships here.
Yeah, and I needed to be on top. Someone put me first. My parents don't.
Oh, no. I didn't have best friends when I was a little kid. I moved around so much, and that quantity was more important than quality. I felt like I needed to grab up all these girlfriends for a limited time, and then when I leave, like, poof, into the night.
They're gone forever.
Right. And then on to the next place, you know, the same thing. And I don't think I started developing solid female friendships until I stayed in one place long enough. In New York, on Long Island, I stayed in the same high school for 3 whole years. Woohoo!
Wow.
And then after that, I went to the area college for another 2 years. So that was like a really long period of like, I am in a place, I should probably lay down some stakes.
Right?
Yeah, put down some stakes.
Hard.
It is. And so I don't really have like old high school buddies that I can go back to because I eventually left Long Island as well and moved on to college in Illinois. You know, I do still keep in contact with one or two of them from New York, but that's really about it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the lasting friendships that I gained were in college and in Illinois. Those are the people that I still go back to, I still talk to. And then after that, I think there was you.
Mm-hmm. Me?
Yeah.
Me!
So since you're in the same state as me, I think you are on top of that hierarchy.
That's right. Also, because I'm awesome.
Well, yeah, but
we never fight.
No.
We fought like one time because I got too hot.
I mean, yeah. But, you know, now that I'm older, I can safely say that I have a couple of best friends.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't say that back in the day. So I don't really, I guess I don't really understand why little girls get angry like this, because I didn't have time for it. I just needed to collect people before I move on my merry way.
Yeah.
But
I moved all the time too when I was little. Like, we didn't stop moving until I was in like 8th grade. So
did you have to switch schools a lot?
Yeah.
Okay.
Usually every year.
Oh.
So the longest I ever stayed in a school was, I was in the same school from 1st through 3rd grade until I was in high school.
Okay.
Actually, my mom and I were just on the phone last night, and I realized when I'm done with my PhD program, this will be the longest I've ever lived in one place.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
That's ever. Crazy.
So, like, I moved all the time, too, and I also, and I still do that thing. Like, I need people to, like, be friends with me immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, we're all going to have fun. Mm-hmm. I have no idea how to sustain this longer than 2 years. So, like, but, like, when I was little, I would always have one person, one or two people who were, like, these are the people I'm really close to.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my problem is that when I was little, I still had the capacity to pick good people.
Okay.
But as I grew up, I kind of lost that ability.
Hmm.
When I got to high school, that got confusing for me. And I started finding myself drawn to people that were not necessarily good for me or even nice to me, but who were willing to hang out with me, even if they were mean to me.
I think that's, like, all high schoolers, though.
Yeah.
I think it's just a shitty time for especially young women. I can't speak for young men. I'm sure they have their own problems being, you know, masculine.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's like, you know, you gotta solidify your place very quickly, or else that shit's gonna stick with you for the next 4 years.
Yep. Or longer.
Or longer. And, yeah, if you... Oh, God. It's a terrible, terrible period in a kid's life. I would not go back for... Well, no, I would go back for $1 million if I have the wherewithal that I have now. Because I look good in high school. Yeah, exactly. Right. And I got paid to time travel? Yeah, I do it. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, I would start learning more about stock markets. I could play the stock markets. I would know about 2007.
Be like, listen, kids, y'all don't know what's coming. Do not invest in real estate.
No.
Don't do it. That's a terrible idea.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I would do it again. With this brain.
I mean, oh my God, even if I had this brain, I especially wouldn't want to go back. Because, you know, like, I mean, my reputation in high school got solidified before my freshman year even started.
Fuck.
This awful woman named Kelly, because band practice started like 2 weeks before school did.
Yeah.
So my freshman year, I was in marching band. And I went to band practice 2 weeks before school started, and there was a senior girl named Kelly who immediately started calling me a slut and, like, trying to fight me because this boy who played saxophone that she liked literally just talked to me and said hi.
Wow.
And she slut-shamed me for my entire first year of school.
Right out the gate.
And I'm blonde, and I'd just gotten big boobs.
Yeah.
So it didn't matter that, like, I was shy. It didn't matter that I liked to read. It didn't matter that I was smart. For the next 4 years, I was the dumb slut. Oh. And to this day, when people who I went to high school find out what I do for a living, they don't believe it. Like, I've gotten messages on Facebook from dudes that I went to high school with who are like, they will literally say to me, whoever would have thought that you'd grow up to be this? And I'm like, me? It's not my fault that you're like...
Holy shit.
I thought so.
Yeah.
But these men feel, like, emboldened to say that to me.
Right.
And I'm like, there is nothing that is less my fault than what you fucking thought of me.
Right.
I still have a chip on my shoulder about it.
Well, I wouldn't blame you.
Yeah. Like, it's just, this shit follows you. I mean, I'm in my 30s.
Yeah.
And people will still say these things to me. So, like, you couldn't pay me enough to go back there.
Hmm. Okay, I got you. That's fair. Kelly, if you're out there, fuck you.
Yeah. Kelly, I don't even remember your last name, but you wore too much makeup and you're a sloppy whore.
And that's the only slut shaming we're going to do on this show.
I don't like to slut shame her. She was awful. She was a senior. She was almost 18 years old and she was picking on a 14-year-old like that. What? Like, what a cowardly bullying.
Yeah.
That's what I don't like. I don't like when people punch down.
No.
I'm like, direct that rage right where it belongs, at your teachers who are trying to make you not wear tank tops.
Probably her mom.
Yeah, right? Probably her mom.
Go punch your mom, Kelly.
Right?
Okay, so female friendships can be absolutely wonderful. Sometimes they can be fraught with some complexities, but it's no different from guys. It's just that young ladies have the, I guess, the habit of being a little bit more dramatic. And I don't... Dramatic because they were shaped that way by the patriarchy. Mm-hmm. So, whatever is going on with Christy, she does eventually get over it because Dawn is here to stay. She's stepsister to Marianne. That's not going to change until, you know, they get a divorce.
Yeah. I wonder if that ever happened.
I don't think it did. And, you know...
They just are.
And, Christy, just so you know, Dawn still has a father in California, and you guys will actually get to go out there and have fun. So, yeah. Watch your mouth and play it cool.
Right? Get ready for the super special, Christy.
That's right.
Just calm the fuck down.
What, do they go on a boat or something?
Probably. I don't know. Babysitters on board. Yeah, babysitters on board. Or do they go on a cruise?
Is it a East Coast cruise or a West Coast cruise?
Well, Christy's there. Maybe it's an Alaskan whale-watching cruise.
That's what lesbians do.
Lesbians love whales. They just do.
I get it. I mean, whales are pretty damn awesome. And they're a matriarchal animal.
Mm-hmm.
They get shit done.
Lesbians are written all over them.
Those whales get shit done. We probably need to go into badass females, ladies, or femmes who get shit done.
Heck yeah!
Obviously, we have... I want to call her Auntie Maxine. Auntie Maxine Waters, our favorite congresswoman from California. Yes, she's in the news of late because she had to share breathing room with Steve Mnuchin. Do we know what he does? What's his deal? I don't know what he's appointed to do, and I really don't care to find out, but
I knew this like 2 days ago.
Okay.
I think he's
Steve Mnuchin is in a congressional hearing, trying to talk some bullshit. He is getting interviewed by Miss Maxine Waters, who...
Right. He's the Secretary Treasury.
No!
He used to be a hedge fund manager.
Ah, damn it.
That's why I couldn't remember it, because it literally doesn't make any sense that he would have that job.
Oh, God.
So whatever.
Okay. So the gentle lady, Waters, is trying to interrogate this fool, trying to get him to just give a straight answer on God knows what. I didn't watch the whole clip. But this fool shows up not knowing the rules, and Miss Waters lets him know what it's all about. He is talking nonsense in circles, and she says, "I'm reclaiming my time." She says it about 40 times.
It's amazing.
Because this fool refuses to answer a simple question. What should be a simple question? He is trying to compliment her on her career. He wants to thank the chair people for letting him be there. All the while, Maxine says, "Nope, you don't need to tell me about my resume. Mm-hmm. I'm reclaiming my time."
Yeah, you need to say yes or no.
Right. Mnuchin looks at the chairman for help. Fellow white man, please help me out here. Shut this woman up.
Woman is making noises.
Right. And the chairman says, "I'm sorry, but the gentle lady still gets her time." He explains the rules to Mnuchin and says, "This will not cut into the gentle lady's time." And, yeah, she just did not stop.
She's amazing.
She doesn't stop. She can't stop. And she is just that. She's amazing. Now, I understand that this badass lady or femme has nothing to do with what we've been talking about.
But we can't just let it go by unremarked.
No, because it's amazing. Mm-hmm. It's already been remixed into a gospel song.
Oh my god. I feel like that's what should play at the end of this episode.
I'll see what I can do.
Okay, yeah. Play us out, Aunt Maxine.
So yeah, she's the best. We're gonna move on to listener letters. We only got one from Phil.
We only got one that's worth a damn.
Yes, that's true. Phil Good wrote and asked us if we were aware of the Kimmy Schmidt episode that featured a Dawn and the ghost surfer ghost?
Surfer ghost.
Yes.
Yeah. If we were aware of it.
If we were aware of it, and did we watch Kimmy Schmidt? And, yeah, he just wanted to throw us some love.
Aw. Well, to answer your question, Phil, yes. And yes. And I think you're great, too.
Yes. And yes. And we're probably going to have you on that particular episode where we will explore the phenomenon of ghosting and fuckboys.
Heck yeah, because that's, I mean, surfer ghost.
Yeah.
That's clearly someone who ghosted Dawn.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I don't trust surfers.
No, you can't. Oh, he's a surfer. He's also, like, a dude who's just, like, really emotionally invested in our relationship and definitely wants to build a home with me.
I'm pretty sure he's culturally appropriating something. I don't know what it is, but something is amiss here.
Yeah. Something. Something's fishy.
I don't like it. Okay, so thanks for that letter, Phil. If you, other listeners and passionate readers, want to, you know, email us a question or a comment, you can check out our Facebook page, Baby Shitters Club, our Twitter page, Baby Shitter Club.
Yeah, but if you look up the Baby Shitters Club, we'll come up.
Yeah, I mean, we're the only thing yet.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
Or email us at babyshittersclub@gmail.com.
That's right. Oh God, it's Friday at noon. Can you hear that?
No. Is it a church?
No, it's the stupid town-wide siren.
Oh, that...
Yeah, what? You know, left over from the Cold War. God damn it. Okay. I can't cut that out.
See, we get... In Cleveland, there are just church bells everywhere at noon because this entire town is so Catholic.
Friday?
Mm-hmm.
Friday.
Every day at noon.
Oh, okay. Well, that lets you know where you are. Mm-hmm. You guys
you forgot about the Lord.
That's right.
Don't forget to feel bad.
I think the gripes that you had earlier on in the episode are probably the gripes that we will end with. Mm-hmm. But we do need to get around to the wild speculation of Anne and Martin.
Yes, please.
Look how organized I'm being right now.
Yeah.
I mean,
do
this...
you have our previous speculation handy?
I don't.
I do.
Thank God.
I figured. So, I'm going to get us caught up.
Thanks.
Here's what we've said about Anne in the past. I mean, number one, she's racist. she's also a scotch-drinking alcoholic with dissociative identity disorder who slaps herself in the face just to feel something.
Oh, wow. I can't believe so we said all of that.
That's right where we're jumping off from.
Okay.
Okay.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. Is she a gun owner?
Anne?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't think she talks about it.
Okay.
You know, like, I think she's probably one of those ladies who's, like, got a license.
Right.
To concealed carry. But, like, it's from, like, something left over from a relationship where she's like, well, I sleep with a gun under my bed.
Right.
But I'd never, like, carry it in public.
Right, okay.
She's probably got one in, like, her RV or something.
Wait, Anne has an RV?
Oh, yeah. She came out last year. Anne's definitely a camper.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, so she just has the one gun, though.
I don't, maybe.
Do you think it's like a tiny little Lady Derringer sort of thing? Or a 9mm or Beretta? Or
it's probably 22. You know, I could see Anne trap shooting, too.
Oh, okay.
She's like, well, it's not about home protection. It's about skill.
Okay. Okay.
Lesbians love skill.
You think she's a good shot?
Yeah. Like Betty Draper. It's probably all that pent-up rage. I mean, I think every queer woman, I think we all joke that, like, our real undergrad major was, like, misdirected queer rage.
Ooh. I like that. I'd take that class.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what an English major is. When you're looking for females, for sure.
That's true, I guess.
Yeah.
Where is Anne camping in this RV?
Probably used to be the Michigan Women's Fest, but since we don't do that anymore because of transphobia, thanks a lot, Mish Fest organizers.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah, it was really, really unfortunate and embarrassing for the queer women community.
That was a really sad time.
Yeah. Years and years and years. But, like, I think she and her partner probably used to camp there, but now they probably go to, like, upstate New York or something. They're like, they seem like Finger Lakes ladies to me.
Oh, definitely.
I mean, Finger Lakes.
Yeah. Do you think that Anne has ever hiked the Appalachian Trail? Or parts of it?
She probably thinks it's cliche, but has probably, like, hiked little bits of it separately, so she never had to tell people, I'm hiking the whole trail.
Right. Okay. So she's, like, a little bit more modest than, she's not out there just flouncing around bragging that she has a gun and an RV and has hiked the entire Appalachian Trail.
All of those things are true.
She's just not telling anybody.
Yeah.
What kind of dog does Anne have?
I'm not getting anything. What do you think?
I think she has a beagle.
Aw, really?
Yeah.
Do you think it's purebred?
Yes, definitely.
It's from a rescue, right?
No, it's not.
Oh!
Anne definitely got into the RV, went to a Pennsylvania Amish farm, and got this puppy.
A puppy was placed in her hands directly from the puppy mill.
Yeah.
And she said, I'll take this one. His name will be Baron.
I like his fighting spirit.
Is Anne a dog fighter?
Maybe, or maybe it's just like a traditional beagle hunting dog, like a fox hunter.
Yeah, or like when she shoots quail out of the sky.
Yeah, it's like one of those, you know, go retrieve it, go get that dead pheasant.
Yeah, I guess no matter how interesting Anne is with her queerness and her dissociative identity disorder and her alcoholism, she's still just a white lady from New England.
Yeah, she's still wealthy. Yeah. And if I were that wealthy, I'd probably go hunt some quail and make my dog get it too. My thoroughbred beagle.
Right?
Fuck pound puppies.
Pound puppies.
All right. Well, I feel good about that. Can you tell us what the next episode will be about?
Oh.
Oh, it's Christy's big day.
What's that? I didn't look. I'm so sorry.
No, you're fine. I've got the website pulled up. I think Christy's big day is basically her mom gets remarried.
Oh, she marries Watson.
Yeah, Watson.
Yeah, Watson's cool, right?
Yeah, I think so.
So wait, is the next episode about remarriage? Is there a subplot?
Oh, fuck. I hope there is, because I don't know if I want to talk about marriage anymore.
I don't want to either. Christy's big day plot summary. Oh, that English major really paid off.
Yeah.
Let's see. Well, on the Babysitter's Club wiki, it says, Christy's Big Day is a 6th book in the Babysitter's Club series. Christy's mother gets married. Christy's a bridesmaid, and the club sits for the children of the guests, which causes much chaos. Holla!
Yeah, what is that? I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah, I like it. It seems like the entire plot is about a wedding.
Oh, God.
Damn it.
The only...
You know, and then the next book after that, isn't that Marianne, Mrs. Logan?
No, I think it's Claudia and Mean Jeannie.
Oh, her mean sister.
Yeah, let's just skip to that.
Yeah, we've talked enough about marriage. You know, okay, so episode number 4 for us is really episode number 5, The Babysitter's Club. You look excited.
Well, I'm reading the main plot for... Claudia and Mean Jeannie.
What's it?
It's the 7th book in the series. Claudia has issues with her smart older sister, even as her grandmother suffers a stroke.
Mimi.
And then somebody writes in the main plot summary, "Boy, if you don't get your musty, dusty, crusty self out of here." And I have no idea why somebody wrote that.
Someone has infiltrated the Babysitter's Club wiki.
Yes!
It's like that time that we infiltrated Conservapedia.
Yes!
If you guys are looking for something fun to do, you can edit Conservapedia to say whatever you want about women.
That's true.
We were trying to teach them about feminism.
It did not work because they edited quickly after. The comment section of this says, what is the summary? Somebody also writes, just edit it. Somebody else writes, you can edit this shit.
Oh my God.
Oh my gosh.
So to whoever... is editing in the Babysitter's Club wiki. Bless your heart, you national treasure.
Yeah, I think this is like a new hero.
Yeah, this kid's doing the Lord's work. Is it Anne?
I don't know. Is Anne fucking around with this wiki page?
How great would that be?
It would be pretty great.
Let's speculate more about that next week.
We will. Well, you guys, until next time, this is the... Baby, you're doing it on purpose. You're fucking this up on purpose. God damn it. All right, I'm done with you.
Bye, everybody.